I would really vote for them to leave us be and let us get our food that we need for the winter.
Subsistence issues take center stage at the Alaska Federation of Natives Convention in Fairbanks. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, October 24th, live from AFN. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Anchorage officials prioritize using federal funds for affordable housing.
It's been obvious that affordable housing is very, very important, and that's the direction that we need to go.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. The Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority is developing the Kinnick Arm Crossing to further develop the transportation system between Anchorage and the Matsu Borough. The bridge could create construction jobs, provide access to land for commercial, industrial, and residential development, and shorten the route to Alaska's interior and North Slope. There's more information on the Kinnick Arm Bridge at kinnickarmbridge.com. This message sponsored by the Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority.
The Alaska Federation of Natives Convention got underway this morning in Fairbanks. The keynote speaker today was Nelson Anungapuk. He's retired as senior vice president of AFN. Nelson urged young people to work hard to achieve success, to listen to their elders, and for Native people to come together to confront big challenges like threats to subsistence and federal cuts to programs. Julie Kidka is the president of AFN. I asked her to describe what she took away from a panel today on tribal-federal relations.
And it really pointed home that there's a greater educational effort that needs to take place, and Native Americans need to band together and make sure that their story is told, because there is such a lack of information, and there is, in some corners, a real bias against Native Americans because of stereotypes or misinformation.
Mm-hmm. Julie, AFN has been a political, cultural entity for nearly 50 years. There was clearly a need when it was formed to bring people together from across the state. At that time, there was issues of land claims, and it was an important formation. Now, Native corporations have attorneys, they have lobbyists. How does and how will AFN work to continue to be relevant in the future?
I think AFN continues to be relevant as long as people want to get together and talk about their concerns and want to reach across to other parts of the state and learn about their concerns, and when they want to work together. When AFN works really well in our convention is you have a greater understanding from Barrow all the way down to Ketchikan of what's going on, and a great compassion that comes from our people to say, hey, we can step up and help, and we can help you, and it's not just all about us and what's going on in our community. So it's the sharing of experiences, the sharing of friendships, the sharing of people's aspirations and dreams that keep people together. And then when they translate that into saying, let's do something about the problems, let's do something about our dreams, and when they come together in convention and agree with a certain purpose, say for example, like Senator Murkowski's write-in campaign. I mean, our committees took a look at that and decided to endorse Senator Murkowski because they thought that she was the best option for the state of Alaska. Our board of directors came together deciding it was the best for the state of Alaska. Our delegates unanimously got it that the future of the state of Alaska was in their hands as well as other Alaskans, and you saw a historic write-in campaign. It's when AFN comes together around a purpose, a unity of purpose and a unity of vision, and takes action, you see things happen. And often it affects all Alaskans, not just Alaska Natives.
Absolutely. Byron Mallott is a candidate for governor. What would change if an Alaska Native person became the state's leader?
Well, I think that that's a question you need to pose to Mr. Mallott. That is not necessarily a question to us. I mean, obviously, we very much support our people registering to vote and getting out to vote and turning out in record numbers. We very much encourage our people to run for political office, everything from the local races or the school board races or the assembly races to the borough races, to legislative races, as well as the statewide office. So we totally encourage people to put their name in the hat and take action if they feel committed to do something. I think with Byron entering the race, it's very inspirational for the Native people. I don't know what your listeners feel about him, but within the Native community, he's very well loved. People respect him, they know him, they have cared about him for many, many decades on that. And to see him, you know, kind of throw his name in the hat and say, hey, I want to make a difference for all Alaska on that, people are inspired by it.
Mm-hmm. Well, Julie, we are going to wrap up here quickly, but every year at AFN, we hear a lot about the continuing struggles because, of course, they're there. Historical trauma, lack of economic opportunity in villages. But there are good things happening, of course. What kind of positive changes have you seen during your tenure at AFN?
Oh, we have absolutely seen so many positive changes. I think in the last 25 to 30 years, you've seen an incredible cultural renaissance going on. You see areas of the state in which traditional Native dancing was suppressed by the missionaries and the churches in their areas, where now the communities have flourishing dance groups and are passing on traditions that were not shared for a long time. Lots of areas. I mean, at our early AFN conventions, you'd have very few dance groups, and they'd be all from certain different regions on that. Now virtually every region of the state, this cultural renaissance, you see it in art, you see it in dance, you see it in paintings, you see it in carvings. I mean, you see it in the pride of the young people in their culture and their identity. So clearly that is one component. You also see one of the most interesting things to me is with our land claims, one of the most fundamental things our land claims did was allowed the Native community to organize economically separate from organizing politically. So we were always organized politically, but now we have an economic institution, the for-profit corporation, a way to organize economically. You also see on the social problems, the alcohol problems on that, you see a massive societal change in attitudes towards that, where it's not accepted to abuse alcohol.
Julie Kitka is president of AFN. Tomorrow is going to be another busy day of political speeches. Congressman Young will speak and Senator Begich. There will be a report from the Bush Caucus of the state legislature, and we'll also hear from the Alaska Arctic Commission. The theme at AFN this year is traditional Native family values. KUAC's Emily Schwing was at the convention this morning and found out that the Native value of subsistence is very much on attendees' minds.
AFN delegates will discuss many issues this week, things like village safety, health and wellness, as well as tribal-federal relations. But for many attendees, there's one issue that stands out.
Virginia Kapotik, originally from Portage Creek, and that's about 30 miles upriver from Dillingham. With our fishing and hunting, I would really vote for them to leave us be and let us get our food that we need for the winter, because everybody hurting. So
subsistence is really important to you?
Yes.
I'm Paul Beans. I'm from Mountain Village on the Lower Yukon. Subsistence fishing during the summertime on the Yukon is declining. And then this summer, we didn't take any king salmon on subsistence.
Subsistence. You got have your fish. Frank Nikolai, I'm from Makiak.
My name is Anne Alexei, I'm from Nikolai.
What are some of the issues that are most important that you really care about that might be discussed here this year?
Probably the hunting, maybe hunting and fishing. Mostly fishing, because we hardly have enough fish at home.
Delegates will consider five resolutions that focus on subsistence. One supports the reauthorization of the Magnuson-Stevens Fishery Conservation and Management Act. It was first passed by Congress in 1976. There's also a resolution that urges the federal government to give priority to indigenous subsistence practices. Delegates will also vote on a resolution that supports the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council's effort to reduce king salmon bycatch. In Fairbanks, I'm Emily Schwing.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a look at this year's AFN theme.
They're very difficult to really bring home the need to practice traditional values like respect.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Wells Fargo, proud supporter of APRN and dedicated to helping people reach their goals on and off the field. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far. And by Alex Hotel and Suites, featuring 122 guest rooms with amenities that include a 24-hour airport shuttle and Wi-Fi. Information on Alaska resident rates at 1-800-221-7550.
The residents of the village of Shishmaref appear to have voted to remain a dry community. The Anchorage Daily News reports the vote was 124 to 98 Tuesday. The results will be certified on Monday. There has been a ban on alcohol in the village for 30 years. Shishmaref is a village of about 600 residents, located 125 miles north of Nome. It could cost more than $1,000 to rent a one-bedroom apartment in Anchorage, according to the most recent rental survey by the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. That number has convinced the city to make affordable housing the main priority in its 2014 Housing and Development Plan. That means money that used to go to social services agencies that serve the poor and homeless will be redirected to projects to help lower rental prices in the city. KSKA's Daisha Eaton has the story.
Two kinds of federal funding are distributed by Anchorage, those that fund building projects and those that fund public service projects, mostly helping the poor. Every year, the city writes a plan for how it's going to spend that federal money. In 2014, there's just one priority, affordable housing. In past year's plans, planner James Baim says the city would fund all kinds of projects.
So we did projects like neighborhood parks. We gave money to Catholic Social Services for Clare House, Covenant House for their shelter. We gave money to Salvation Army for their shelter.
The way things look now, Baim says, such projects will not be funded this year or anytime soon.
Well, right now, our direction is programming most of our funding for rental housing development. We've changed complete direction.
In 2013, the city got about $2.5 million in federal grant money. In a survey the city conducted, residents ranked affordable housing right behind homelessness projects and those that helped victims of domestic violence. The city made affordable housing the priority because access to housing can help reduce homelessness and make it easier for domestic violence victims to leave difficult situations. Brittany Matero works on homelessness issues with the Department of Health and Human Services. She's happy the municipality is finally responding to the need for affordable housing.
It's been obvious from the data that's been collected and from the community and their responses to us that affordable housing is very, very important, and that's the direction that we need to go.
But the new priority for the city will come at the expense of some social service providers. Catholic Social Services is set to receive $30,000 in public service grant money from the municipality to fund the overflow facility for Brother Francis Shelter this winter. Susan Bomolaski with Catholic Social Services says if public service funding is eliminated, they'll have to stop that service.
We'll cut the overflow shelter to Brother Francis Shelter, which currently operates out of Beans Cafe. If we don't receive the funding, we can't take it from our regular donations. We have too much to raise, just to keep our core programs running.
But Bomolaski says if the money's reallocated for supportive housing, it might not be such a bad thing. She says it may give homeless people who can't find appropriate, affordable housing a chance to get out of the shelter cycle.
With more supported housing, we could likely move people out of Brother Francis Shelter, and then perhaps we wouldn't need to use the overflow, and that would be a good situation.
Officials with the Municipal Department of Health and Human Services say the funds would likely be used to build and operate supportive housing projects. The Assembly will consider the municipality's 2014 action plan for how federal grant money will be used soon. Specific projects will likely go before the body for approval in early 2014 and can be designated or chosen through an application process. Municipal officials say NeighborWorks, Anchorage, and RuralCap are likely choices for funding affordable rental developments. In Anchorage, I'm Daisha Eaton.
A multi-year international investigation into illegal bear and goat hunts has resulted in the sentencing of a longtime big game guide from Haines. Margaret Friedenauer of KHNS reports.
72-year-old Ronald Martin pled guilty and was sentenced Tuesday in U.S. District Court after admitting to multiple illegal hunts, falsifying documents, and importing illegally taken wildlife between Canada and the U.S. Martin has been a big game guide in Haines for more than 30 years. On Thursday morning, he was at a downtown bar discussing the case with friends and patrons, but he wouldn't comment to KHNS for this story. According to Assistant U.S. Attorney Jack Schmidt, the joint U.S. and Canada investigation was dubbed Operation Bruin, a nod to the Old English word for brown bear. Law enforcement documented 10 illegal brown bear hunts, 3 illegal black bear hunts, and 4 illegal mountain goat hunts. The violations involved Martin allowing his Canadian and U.S. clients to take brown bears after illegally baiting them, hunting without proper licenses, and failure to be present with the clients during some of the hunts. Schmidt said it was also discovered Martin and his clients would falsify records to smuggle wildlife hides, furs, horns, and meat between the two countries. The violations spanned 9 years, from 2002 through 2011. Transporting illegally taken game across state and international borders triggers a violation of federal law known as the Lacey Act. That's when the U.S. Attorney's Office got involved, Schmidt said.
The Lacey Act is to prevent the commercialization of wildlife trafficking. And Lacey violations can occur in several different ways. In this particular case, there was underlying state law violations. And when those state law violations include the trafficking of those illegally harvested wildlife, then it becomes within the purview of the federal government.
Besides Martin, the investigation resulted in 17 Canadians being charged with 55 violations. Some of them have also been charged in the U.S. State law enforcement worked with federal and Canadian officials for several years, says Alaska State Trooper spokesperson Beth Ibsen. She called it one of the most extensive wildlife investigations she has seen at the state level. As many as 10 wildlife troopers from across the state worked on the case, including serving state and federal search warrants and conducting interviews in Alaska and the lower 48.
This was a big operation, and the different entities, the different federal, state, and Canadian entities were pretty interwoven and really kind of cooperated and worked well together to put this together, because this was huge.
Martin was sentenced to 4 years probation and fined $40,000. During his probation, he can't hunt in the U.S. or anywhere else in the world for 2 years or provide any guiding-related services. The investigation also brought about state charges. As part of that conviction earlier this year, Martin forfeited his Piper airplane, a pickup, an ATV, several weapons, and he surrendered his guide license for life. Another Haines guide is also facing charges in the investigation. Martin's half-brother, John Katzik, and 3 of his Canadian clients have been indicted in U.S. District Court, also charged with conspiracy and smuggling violations related to illegal hunts. That case is ongoing. Reporting in Haines, I'm Margaret Friedenauer.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
First National Bank Alaska, offering business solutions to help Alaska's dreams grow for 90 years. On the web at fnbalaska.com, an equal housing lender, member FDIC.
Calling all Alaskan artists, Alaska Public Media's annual art showcase and auction is February 6th through the 8th. This unique opportunity features Alaskan artists and their work in fine arts media in a live auction televised around the state and in an online catalog. Deadline for submission is December 16th. Visit alaskapublic.org for more information. Proceeds benefit Alaska Public Media.
Governor Sean Parnell announced at AFN today that he's preparing to launch demonstration projects to allow tribal courts to process more alcohol and domestic violence cases. He said tribes can often provide local, culturally relevant justice services. Jerry Isaac is president of the Tanana Chiefs Conference, which has one of the most active tribal court systems in the state. Outside of the convention center, I asked for his reaction to Governor Parnell's announcement.
I am hopeful that he means what he says. I have been talking with the governor about matters such as the tribal courts, where we do, as tribes, have the fiduciary duty of protection of our tribal members. And it's something that protection of our tribal members is not something that we want to negotiate or to discuss. It's a very simple matter to us. Tribal membership is just exactly that. They are members of our identified tribes, and the tribe as a collective group will protect the members. And you know, history-wise, Native kids have been taken away from families and communities to the point where some of them are just now returning. And as long as I live, I'm never going to see them taken away again. That's because of the recognition of the tribal authority of the Native village of Tanana Cross.
Jerry, you're speaking today on the theme of this year's AFN, which is traditional values. What does that mean nearly 50 years now after the formation of AFN? Of course, traditional values go back much farther than AFN, but in the nearly 50 years that AFN has been this cohesive body, how have values changed, or have they changed?
There has been changes. The very basic practice of, nomadic way of life, for example, is gone. We don't have nomadic way of life anymore. We have more of a sedentary kind of lifestyle. And then we're heavily influenced by the control and limitations of the educational rules and regulations. We're extremely limited by the economic conditions and landscape. And many times, even the very institutions that we live in tends to dizzy weight the practice and the belief in the Native way. Nowadays, we try to teach our kids, our children, about just basic respect. Basic respect like seeing an elder and offering to give them help when needed, not to bother them, not to pester them, not to be disrespectful in terms of the homes that they might be in, not to be disrespectful when people are talking. These things have all changed quite a bit. And some of the Native schools are trying to reinstitute teachings of these things, but it has to come from the home. And, when you have a home that really doesn't believe too much in the Native way, the spirituality of belief and the spiritual beliefs that come along with it, they're very difficult to really bring home the need to practice traditional values like respect.
Jerry Isaac is president of the Tanana Chiefs Conference. He spoke at AFN today on the convention's theme, Traditional Native Family Values. A national magazine has named the southeast fishing community of Petersburg as its best yachting town for 2013. KFSK's Matt Lichtenstein reports.
Yachting Magazine's readers originally nominated Alaska's Little Norway for the title during the publication's third annual 50 Best Towns competition. Editors narrowed down the nominees to a list of 10 this summer, and readers then voted for their favorite in an online poll.
Petersburg
pretty much ran away with the competition.
Yachting Magazine Associate Editor Dan Harding says 410 people chose Petersburg, which was 44% of the votes. Petersburg's named as number one in the magazine's November edition. Oxford, Maryland, and Beaufort, North Carolina were previous contest winners. Petersburg had some tough competition this year, including Seattle and New Orleans. Harding was glad to see so much support for a smaller community.
Anytime we get, you know, a location like Petersburg or even Oxford, it's just, it's a real treat for us. I think it's a real treat for the readers because, you know, these are great locations that, you know, don't really get the recognition that maybe they deserve. I mean, sure, they're not as popular. They might not have, you know, a dozen marinas with, you know, triple-digit number of slips, but I mean, like Petersburg, I mean, what they lack in amenities make up for in just natural beauty, and I think that's really what this competition is all about. I mean, we set out to hopefully find a gem of a town, and so far we've done that, and I think we found a real great destination in Petersburg.
Petersburg Chamber of Commerce and the Petersburg Economic Development Council tried to encourage voting with frequent Facebook postings. PEDC coordinator Liz Cabrera was excited to hear that Petersburg had won.
It's really neat to see people get behind their hometown and make this happen. So it was kind of a community-wide effort. Plus, I think friends and family from around the country all voting for Petersburg that made it happen.
Must be said in competition with much bigger towns who probably did the same thing.
Exactly, yeah. So somehow we pulled ahead of much bigger towns, you know, towns like Seattle and New Orleans. And so Petersburg had something special about it that encouraged people to vote. So it's really nice to see that.
Cabrera was hopeful the publicity would translate into more boaters choosing to visit Petersburg, maybe stay a while and spend some money in town. Petersburg's harbor has moorage for about 500 vessels, large and small. Harbormaster Glo Wallen was also happy about the news. She says Petersburg's seen an increase in private pleasure boats stopping here in recent years.
Yeah, we have, and probably more noticeable is the fact that they want to spend a little more time. So a lot of us get contacted, I think, all along the Southeast area of spending the winter so that they can take a couple of summers to look at Southeast. And so we in Petersburg have gotten a lot of calls, you know, in the last 4 or 5 years of spending the winter and being able to enjoy Southeast for a second summer or a third summer.
Wolin says about 50% of the pleasure boats that stop in town each year are coming here for the first time. Yachting Magazine is based in Rhode Island and has 350,000 U.S. subscribers. In Petersburg, I'm Matt Lichtenstein.
And that's all for this live edition of Alaska News Nightly from AFN in Fairbanks. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org, and you can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Emily Schwing at AFN, Daisha Eaton in Anchorage, Margaret Friedenauer in Haines, and Matt Lichtenstein in Petersburg. Thanks to KNBA and KUAC for help with the live broadcast. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by Crowley. Celebrating 60 years in Alaska, Crowley knows Alaska and uses that experience to deliver project solutions from concept to completion. More at CrowleyAlaska.com. Many Alaskans are choosing to make energy efficiency improvements around their homes. Investing in efficient light bulbs or a programmable thermostat could save hundreds annually. For more tips on how to save money and energy, visit akenergyefficiency.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Energy Authority. Those living with asthma know that each day their life can take several different routes. So take care of yourself with daily medication and you'll be well-rested and eager to take on the day. Miss taking your medication and you'll end up with restless sleep, days at home sick, or even in the emergency room. So treat your asthma even when you're feeling your best to keep you from your worst. Information at asthmainalaska.org or 1-800-LUNG-USA. This message sponsored by the American Lung Association.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.